Dear Mother,
Love Letter to the Earth, number one.
Love,
beloved mother of all things,
our journey.
Dear Mother Earth, I bow my head before you as I look deeply.
Jesus Christ is the Son of God.
Love Letter to the Earth,
and yet he is also
number nine.
Do you remember when you were
father,
son,
the child of the earth?
Dear Mother Earth, we have given ourselves the name Homo sapiens.
You didn't yet wear the
precursors
of
our species.
Began to us
here at
that time.
I was born from you.
Welcome, friends. This is the Emerging World Project podcast. What are you doing here? I am your host, Addison Brown.
And I am your co-host, Marley Alabanza.
Our featured guest today is Isaiah Scott. Isaiah was born and raised in Savannah, Georgia. He's an avid birder, natural history illustrator, and an outdoor brand ambassador. He is also a student at Cornell University, where he is majoring in environment and sustainability with a focus on ornithology. Before we invite you to enjoy this conversation, Marley had some questions for Ike to answer off the top of his head. Let's have a listen to that.
Describe yourself in three words.
So I would describe myself as creative, eccentric, and kind.
If you could paint anything, what would it be and why?
I would definitely paint birds. I love painting birds. I love birds.
What word would you add to the dictionary and what would it mean?
I would add outer, and how you spell it, it's O-U-T-C-H-E-R-E, and pretty much what it means is out here, or like comes from the phrase we out here, or we be out here, and I really like this term. Mainly it's used for black birders, and that was kind of just coined in Black Birders Week, when we first celebrated Black Birders Week, saying we out here, we're outside, we're out here having fun, enjoying nature, bird watching, and I just love the word. It's just we out here.
What are you currently reading?
One book that I'm kind of currently reading or looking at is Sparrow Envy, A Field Guide to Birds and Lesser Beasts by Dr. J. Drew Lanham.
How would you define spirituality?
I would define spirituality as a personal relationship with God, or your relationship with the universe, with nature, your relationship with all living things around the world, and kind of just a self-realization of you and the universe.
What terrible movie do you love?
I would say, growing up, I remember this one movie, Spy Kids, and I used to love that movie as a child, and I recently, I watched one of the Spy Kids movies, and I realized how bad it was. Like how the graphics were just bad, the acting, just the whole plot, just everything. But I just loved that movie as a child, and I still kind of like the movies.
What's something new happening in your life right now?
I recently just finished my first year at Cornell University, so I am a rising sophomore, and that's something new.
What is your closest close call?
Well, personally, I know something just off the top of my head, but it's not necessarily my call, but it's, I was there when it happened. I remember me and my family, we went to a trip to Puerto Rico, and we went on a hike in the El Yunque National Rainforest, And as soon as we got in the car, I remember my brother was about to touch this plant. But then as he was about to touch it, our guide that was with us, like, stopped him and he was like, wait, stop, don't touch it.
What is your version of there are two types of people in this world?
Yes. Just off the top of my head, I just, people that birdwatch and then people that don't.
And last but not least, what animal best represents your personality?
I would say like a blackbird. And I guess this doesn't matter, like if it's a red-winged blackbird or a rusty blackbird. Just, I don't know, blackbird. Yeah, because they're very colorful, and like when the sun shines on them, they have bright colors, iridescent, and they're just very, I just love the blackness, the beauty of it.
It's lovely to have you. How are you today?
Yes, I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on the podcast. I'm really excited to speak with you.
That's really fantastic. So I love to open these interviews by asking people, when do you think you first noticed your relationship to the natural world?
I think I first noticed pretty early in life. When I was younger, I loved going outside, like playing in the backyard, or going to the beach, or going to a nature reserve, or somewhere out in nature. I just loved.
By young, how old were you?
I would say probably around 5 or 6 years old. Mm-hmm. Kind of around like pre-K, kindergarten years.
Now, tell me again, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Savannah, Georgia, pretty much a forest in our backyard. But the beach was like 30 minutes away. So we would frequently go to the beach, like Hilton Head Island, which is in South Carolina, which right across the line between South Carolina and Georgia. Yeah, so pretty much the beach was like our backyard.
That's so wonderful. So who has been your biggest influence?
My biggest influence? I would have to say my mom is probably my biggest influence on me. My mom is this very supportive and kind, and she always gives great advice and she just always encourages me when every endeavor, any hobby, or whether it be sports or in clubs or, and then with bird watching, she just been my biggest supporter. And people say we look alike and act alike. So,
Oh, that's wonderful. Did she introduce you to birding, or how were you introduced to birding?
So my mom actually didn't. She knew nothing about bird watching. I had a college visit. Well, this was my brother's college visit to Cornell University. And when we went up there, this was when I was in middle school, I think like eighth grade. So I was around 13 years old. And we got there, I saw this flyer for the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. And I always loved looking at pamphlets and flyers that they have, like whenever traveling, just to see if there's any cool place to check out, any cool like nature preserve or like zoo or something. And I was just like, wow, there's this center about birds. It seems pretty interesting and fun, like anything animals related. Like I wasn't really into birds then. I just liked all animals. But then we went to the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. And I was just inspired. Just when we walked in, there was this beautiful facility with they had this huge mural called the Wall of Birds, and it just portrays the diversity of birds all across the world. And it's on this big map, And it's just these large, colorful illustrations. And I was so inspired because I didn't know there were so many bird species pay attention to. I never noticed until I visited the lab and I got my first pair of binoculars. They had a gift shop there and I went bird watching. I feel like I've been bird watching all my life, but didn't know it. But actually bird watching with binoculars at their nature preserve there. And I just continued to do it. I was like, I'm going to keep bird watching and see where it takes me.
I can understand that completely. Aren't binoculars like game changing? Like once you are able, for me, it happened similar. And in once I was able to see a bird up close through the binoculars, I was never the same. It's a game changer. I mean,
yes,
it's just exquisite. And there you were standing in front of all these other birds. Must have just piqued your curiosity. I love that. That's a wonderful story. The wonderful story. And here you are all these many years later, still doing it. I want to talk about some of the a little distressing things that are happening right now with climate and animals. And you did talk about loving animals. And then we'll move into a little bit more positive areas. But first, I want to ask you about how you feel about birds as pets or hunted for sport or in captivity for entertainment.
Yes. So how do I feel? I guess just the whole, just the idea of, well, mainly with like using animals as like a form of entertainment or enjoyment, but it has like a negative impact on the animal itself, always kind of bothered me. And especially with like here in Georgia or like in the Southeast, like turkey hunting and quail hunting and or even dove hunting, those are kind of, and duck hunting is kind of like a big thing. And but it just, I just had a feeling that I feel like humans, we shouldn't be hunting them in the large numbers and in the just the way that we do. And yeah, it just always bothered me.
Yeah, it feels like it's hard to reconcile. Like there's a bit of dissonance, especially for someone like yourself who is close to birds and loves them so much. And I'm sure you understand their importance in the ecosystems. And so there's that dissonance, which I think is probably, you know, the conversation we're all going to begin to start having as we discover our deeper love and our deeper connection to the animals in the world. I was curious about that because I know that that is it's a big sport. And well, even when I'm in cities and I see the little birds, in cages being sold for $2, you know, and just the wildlife trade is just really wrought with corruption and that, and, you know, taking birds from the wild and selling them. I just really want to start having conversations with folks about what one can do. And you being a young person getting out in the world, you're going to be a great voice for that, I hope. So if we look at growing human population and human encroachment on wild spaces and climate change, they're all having this devastating effect on our feathered friends. What personally do you think, or would you suggest someone could do, really simple, to help our feathered friends here?
Yeah, so what I would suggest is just making sure, like, like your home or areas around you are just bird friendly and places where birds can thrive. So this can be simple things such as putting decals on your windows or something to break the surfaces of windows, because that's one of the top killers of birds is window strikes. There's billions of birds that die every year and from windows. And then also planting native plants around your area, plants that are naturally found in your ecoregion or your area that can support birds, that either it could be like plants that produce fruit that certain birds eat, or plants that attract insects that the bird eats, or...
Right. I was thinking about how insects, the decline in insects, and that has a lot to do with with plants, and how we are not so much planting indigenous plants, but lawns and things that, you know, that don't support wildlife or insects. So yes, and planting indigenous plants is so hugely important. Really wonderful tips.
Oh yes, yeah. Plants are the just the foundation of ecosystems. So yes, very important.
Right. So you also paint, draw birds and nature. You started to tell me earlier doing our quick like a bunny questions, but I'll let you expand on it a little bit. How important is that creative outlet for you? And how does it come into effect in your life?
Kind of the same way how I have my relationship with nature at an early age. I had just just love painting and drawing at an early age. And so that's always just been part of my life, and it's just been a way of just expressing myself. And yeah, after I got into bird watching and birds, it just kind of birds just started to incorporate in my artwork. Yeah, now I just love drawing birds, and I just recently took a class in at Cornell called The Art and Science of Birds, and it was all about illustrating birds, and it was really awesome.
Oh wow! Does it make you want to go into that area of illustration, or do you also draw imaginary characters? I was doing a little research, and I read an interview that you did, and you started to talk about, I didn't get finished with it quite, but about putting birds in the spaces where enslaved people were to show, well, I'll let you explain what I think I might've seen or what you were saying. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. About the Echoberry Fellowship book project.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so with that, I was endowed money to illustrate a book, and it's mainly going to be a mostly illustrated book, and it's going to be just about the connection of birds and African culture, and how enslaved West Africans through the transatlantic slave trade and I have some key areas such as like in the Caribbean, the Barbados, and then the Gullah Geechee Heritage Corridor, which is South Carolina, Georgia, and like Northern Florida, and how they pretty much had to adapt to the nature of these areas and how they encountered bird life and how that inspired their culture, such as in Gullah Geechee, there are lots of birds that are portrayed in their folklore, and just how just birds were also just a natural representation of liberation and freedom for African people, and how also birds reminded them of their homeland and their in their West African roots and heritage. And so that's something I'm currently doing and currently illustrating for the book. And yes, I'm really excited for it.
It sounds really, really interesting. Now, are you working in collaboration, or will you also, besides the illustration, will you write the text to it as well? And will it be a hard book or an online book?
Yeah, so currently I'm not doing any collaborations, but I'm actually kind of working with my mom with this, and I'm going to do all the illustrations, and then my mom was it was either her or either she was going to get someone else to write the text for it.
That sounds really interesting project. Good luck to you. I'm excited already.
Thank you.
Then I'm going to come back to the Gullah Geechee. I know there's some other things we want to talk about with regards to that, but I want to first ask you about your birding and hiking business. You started a business, and like, who do you take birding and hiking, and how do you get them to come to you?
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, I started an ecotourism brand or business called Ike's Birding Hikes. And Ike is one of my nicknames that my family would call me ever since I was little. And so just a great catchy name for the brand is Ike's Birding Hikes. And it just kind of flows, just goes together.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, this started pretty recently after I first started bird watching, and I really enjoyed it so much I wanted to find a way to share it with people in my community, with friends and family, people in my school. Then the idea about leading bird watching hikes and taking people out into nature and to see the birds that lived around them, and to just have an outlet for people to connect with nature.
Do you coordinate with national parks or other events that are around, or how would somebody find out about Ike's Birding Hikes?
Well, recently I partnered with a national park called Timaquan Preserve, which is in Jacksonville, Florida, and I did a Ike's Birding Hikes with them for an event. This was in April for World Migratory Bird Day, and this was an all-day celebration at the park, and I partnered with them to lead some bird watching hikes, and so currently I'm trying to connect with more national parks, do Ike's Birding Hikes nationally, like all over the country, and maybe even aim for all over the world in a different place. And
yeah, I love that. I would love having a guide other than my book. And you seem like you'd be just a fun, knowledgeable guide. You seem really adventurous. I love that. I love that a lot.
I love adventure.
Well, let me ask you. Right? Adventure is good. So what about, let's say, young people? Or I guess your hikes aren't really just geared towards young people. They're geared towards people in general, just to get people to be more interested in birds.
Yeah, I always love to encourage young people, especially, to have this connection with nature and just to be the next generation of conservationists of this world. And
Agreed, because the statistics are a little frightening in terms of young people being outdoors, or in the U.S., it's like children spend 90% of their time indoors.
Oh, wow.
That's equivalent to the time outdoors. That 10% is equivalent to what somebody in prison would get outdoors. And those are really frightening statistics. So any way that we can encourage people and young people to get outdoors is monumental. And right now it's crucial. Right now is sort of the tipping point. So
yes.
Ike, you are playing a key role. You are playing a key role. So if you were, what would you say to young people that live in cities who are not quite sure about this whole birding thing?
Yeah, so what I always tell young people is to just go outside and give bird watching a try. And it can be, especially in the city, just check to see if there's any local parks, areas with that could be potential habitat for birds, areas with trees. It can even be from your windowsill or from your balcony, or just any way to have any access outdoors. Just give it a go. Go bird watching. See if you like it. And if you do, if bird watching is just after you found out how awesome bird watching is, keep going with it, and it'll just, there's so many great opportunities that bird watching and ornithology can do for you. And
so, like I was saying earlier, and so necessary. That would be a really wonderful element to your business, is to focus on cities, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like getting people that live in cities to get out and bird watch. We're just in the sort of pre-production phase of a project called Knock Knock. And it is a collaborative event with birders and young people and binocular companies. So in the same vein, we did a documentary film many years ago where we gave cameras to kids. This way we're going to be giving binoculars to children and doing a sort of, like I said, a collaboration of citizen science and education for young people. So you and I should talk about that, even though I know you have a completely full plate, but somewhere down the line. Okay. I would love for you to share with our audience about your GoFundMe project and your efforts to purchase 40 acres or more of land to preserve the habitat, wildlife, and the culture of the Gullah Geechee people. Can you please tell us about that?
Yeah, so just growing up, I always had a dream of having a nature preserve and protecting land and habitat for wildlife. And I just had just a breakthrough moment in April recently, and about just, I need to just take action and make that dream and that this aspiration reality and happen. So I announced about the 40 acre nature preserve project and made a GoFundMe. And the 40 acre, where 40 acres came from is the term 40 acres and a mule, which was supposed to be given to freed African Americans after the end of slavery. And I just wanted that as just a statement of not only is this a ecological preserve, it also has a historical and cultural aspect as well. And I also wanted this land to be to preserve Gullah Geechee culture and to allow traditions to continue to be practiced. I meant to mention this, but my heritage is Gullah Geechee. Our land has been taken for like golf courses and resorts. And an example is Hillhead Island. It used that whole, it was one of the first free black towns. It was descendants of slaves who had a community on that whole island. And during the late 1900s, roads and bridges were being built to the island, and Gullah-Geechee people were being pushed off the land for these resorts and golf courses and these hotels as just vacation spots for white people. And one of the last remaining intact Gullah-Geechee communities is Sapelo Island, which I love a chance to go and visit. Preserving land is also crucial with the climate crisis, and as the forest and shrublands and grasslands are carbon sinks and they absorb carbon, and also preventing land from being developed prevents more greenhouse gases and CO2 to be produced. So this is just action that I wanted to take to do something about the threats to our environment, to birds and wildlife, to culture, to people. And so yes, I made a GoFundMe, and I'm making progress. I just raised a little bit over $3,000, and I'm trying to get legal status first before purchasing land, and creating a nonprofit is in the works, and I'm just really excited where this is going, and just thankful of everyone, all the people who donated and supported this project.
Like, it's a really beautiful project. You said you were going to start a nonprofit, so it sounds like you have some other folks involved. Do you have the land that you're interested in mind already?
Oh, yes. Pretty much I'm currently looking at land in the Low Country area, and this is just a region in South Carolina and Georgia, like on the southeast coast. This land is within the Gullah-Geechee Heritage Corridor, and so I wanted to find land within this range, and it's also where I grew up and where my heritage and my ancestry can be found. My whole lineage was here. So yes, I'm currently looking. We've been looking at places like in Beaufort, South Carolina, or in Riceboro, Georgia.
So effectively, what would happen on that land? Just the preservation of it? Or would you maybe start, I don't know, you wouldn't not to live there, but maybe a school or something to that effect? Or would it just be no humans whatsoever? Definitely no golf courses.
definitely not. but no, I really want to do some land management practices and have this as a preserve for the public and the people to enjoy and make it accessible to people. And I know a few like starter projects is if there's any like invasive plant species, do like invasive plant species removal, and planting native plants, and just creating a habitat that'll have the most biodiversity and avian species richness. I'm currently researching like what other nature preserves in the area are doing.
It's important work to be done, and it's important that people like yourself and others are looking at it to use be in harmony with the land in that way,
yes.
Right? Moving away from our extraction mentality to a reciprocity and harmonious mentality. It's a beautiful project, and I wish you again so much success and any sort of help. I don't know how. I do know people that do retreats on Sapelo, and I talked to another organization on this podcast last year, the Gangster to Growers project, and I know they do some work there on Sapelo. So it's really beautiful, and we will give all of your information at the end of our talk so that people know where to go and to support you. And of course, if there's anything that I can do or my foundation can do, we would love to connect with you on that level. So we'll have that conversation some other time. I want to ask you, you're so knowledgeable, and I just want to let you know how much I appreciate the path that your life is taking and the focus that you're putting on that. It is so wonderful to hear young people like you moving in this direction. So I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, and I will be supporting you all the way. We're talking to Isaiah Scott. He is the recipient of the Eckleberry Fellowship for 2021, which endows nature artists with the goal of enhancing the impact of their work. His plan is to illustrate and create a book that depicts the relationship of birds and African culture in continental Africa, as well as the diaspora. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Can you talk about what are some of your long-term aspirations after university, besides that big project right there?
Yes. What I really dreamed of doing was traveling the world and seeing all the world's birds species have to offer, and traveling and learning about different cultures and seeing beautiful places in nature, also doing more conservation work with like threatened and endangered species or protecting crucial habitats. And then
it's a big world out there.
Yes, yes. I just to see the world, and that's something that I dream of doing. And then I don't know, maybe down the line, maybe when I retired or like grow old, and to have just like a small little house somewhere on the in the low country area, like maybe on like a coastal sea island or something, and maybe even somewhere near the preserve, or maybe even on
that would be ideal. I think traveling is such a, especially when you're looking at birds, like, you know, going all over the world to see the different species. I forgot what special I was watching. I think it was the one that Barack Obama narrated. And I can't even remember the name of the bird, and you're going to know. But it had like a 20-foot wingspan, this bird. I can't remember the name of it, but my jaw was dropping when I watched it. And I said, oh my gosh, like I have to go there and see that bird, which is highly unlikely. When I remember it, I'm going to send you a note. Do you know what it is?
Oh, is it the harpy eagle?
Could be.
Oh,
okay. I mean, this was like the size, I'm probably exaggerating, but it felt like it was the size of a person. It was unfathomable how large it was. I want to say the Andes, perhaps in the Andes.
Okay. Andean condor.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
They're huge.
Oh my goodness. What a beauty. Unbelievable. So do you have, I know you probably get this question all the time, but do you have some bird that you absolutely must see in your lifetime?
Yes, I have several of them. Let's see. Well, I know one off the top of my head. It's called the Kagu, and it's this very bizarre flightless bird, and endemic to New Caledonia. And it's a white bird, and it has this like frill on its head, and they can't fly, but they they make like this crazy call, and they just sing, just
they just. I sing love that all. They can't fly, but they're it's a bird.
Yes. And that bird always interests me because it's just so unique. It's like no, and yeah. So hopefully, I'd love to go and see it. They're also endangered, I believe, unfortunately. But hopefully in the future, I'd love to maybe do conservation work for the species and to help them be around. And,
yeah, that sounds like an amazing. Amazing bird without flight. I'd like to see that too. I'm in California. We have a really rich biodiversity and so many birds. Like I was just telling you where I'm at now in the mountains. They're just, it's unbelievable. The other day I saw a bird and I didn't even recognize it. And it was gone by the time I, you know, got my phone to turn on my app to blah, 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 blah. It was gone. And I was like, what? What an amazing world we live in. And how amazing to look up, you know, more often than looking down, right? To just to look up and to see this whole world, just this whole world. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm just wondering, what are they talking about? It's so beautiful. I mean, it's just so, so beautiful. So in closing, Ike, I want to have one more fun question for you, okay? But first tell me where I should direct people.
Oh, yes. So, yes, you can find my, purchase my prints, or find my artwork on the Charleston Art Market. And if you go in there and just search up my name, it'll show my whole catalog of art. My Instagrams, my main one, Ike's Birding Hikes. That's my Instagram. And my art Instagram is the Isaiah E. Scott. And then also you can find my GoFundMe link for the 40-acre nature preserve project in my bio of Ike's Birding Hikes.
Okay, so that information will be made available. Okay, in closing, here's your one question. If you had one billboard, Ike, for all the world to see, what would it say?
Just a message, just to tell people to notice and be a steward to our natural world and to the earth and to the all living things, to the animals and birds and plants and yes.
I love that. To remember that one is an ambassador, or to be an ambassador to the earth. Yes. Right? And so our earth includes all of those things. Wildlife, plants, minerals, air, water. Wonderful. You are a remarkable human being, and I have enjoyed listening to you. And I appreciate the work that you're putting into the world and that you will continue to do. And I thank you for taking the time to come and talk to us.
And thank you for having me and asking these amazing questions. And and yes, I was really, really glad to be on the podcast.
All right, that's going to do it for us for this episode. I'm Addison Brown, and this is the Emerging World Project podcast. What are you doing here? We'll catch you all on the flip side, okay? And remember, be the light in the room.
Thank you for stopping by. You can help us spread the word about What Are You Doing Here by sharing this episode or leaving a review in your favorite podcast app. Reviews help potential listeners see that our show is worth their time, and every single one makes a difference. For a deeper look at what the Emerging World Project is up to, head on over to emergingworldproject.org. The Emerging World Project studios are on Tongva land.